I'm Shanna Hutchison, dietitian, blogger, and mama, born and raised in the heart of the Midwest. I believe that wellness goes way beyond what we eat and that our body size does not determine our worth. I am passionate about showing other women how to live a life they truly love, one that feels purposeful, that helps them feel their best physically, mentally, and emotionally, and that being a mom can be one of the best things you ever do without it becoming your entire identity. This is a place you can come to hear vulnerable and interesting conversations about health and wellness, motherhood, entrepreneurship, and more. If you want to find freedom with food, learn how to improve your overall well-being, and stop waiting for a number on the scale to start living your best life and go after your goals, then you're in the right place. I'm so excited to learn and grow together. This is the Wellness for the Win podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Wellness for the Win podcast. I cannot wait to share this episode with you today because I know there are so many women in my audience who will benefit from hearing it. I chat with so many of you in my DMs every day, and a lot of you are having a baby around the same time as me. Some of you are having your first baby or your second or your third and wanting to breastfeed, or maybe you're in the first year of your baby's life and still have questions about nursing, pumping, or even anticipating your weaning journey. So for this episode, I sat down with my friend, international board-certified lactation consultant Summer Friedman, also known as Done Naturally on social media. You might be more familiar with that name. So I was introduced to Summer during my pregnancy with Rhett and found all of her content to be so incredibly helpful. And I was so super grateful to be a part of her private Facebook community when I was postpartum so I could ask questions as they came up and just overall feel really supported in my breastfeeding journey, which can otherwise feel really overwhelming and isolating at times. So I gathered so many questions from my audience for this interview, and we literally could have talked for like 4 hours. So with that said, this is actually going to be a two-parter. I didn't want to cut out any of the questions because I felt like there were just so many good ones that were important to address, and I didn't want to leave anyone hanging on any of the things that they wanted to learn about. So I really believe and hope that you will find value in both episodes because they're both literally packed with so much information. So first of all, I just want to say thank you to Summer for so much of her time and for sharing her knowledge and expertise with us. I hope you guys will enjoy them. So just so you know, a heads up for part one specifically, here are a few things that we're going to dive into today. We'll talk about how to set yourself up for success for breastfeeding during pregnancy. What is colostrum and should we collect it during pregnancy? We'll talk about all things pumping, different types of pumps, when to start pumping, how often to do it when you have a newborn, etc. We'll talk about engorgement and kind of how to navigate that in the early days postpartum when your milk comes in, how to establish and maintain a good milk supply, very, very important, how often newborns should be nursing, her thoughts on tracking diapers and feeds, cluster feeding, pace feeding bottles, pros and cons of the Hakka, things that can lead to oversupply, and honestly, even more than that. So that is some of the stuff that you can expect in this episode for part one, and then I'll share a little recap at the end of this episode for what you can expect for part two. So let's go ahead and dive in and meet Summer.
Okay. my name is Summer Friedman, and I am an IBCLC, so an International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. I am also a La Leche League leader, and I have been in the field of lactation since 2006. Started out as a La Leche League leader, and then in 2009-2010 started practicing as an LC. I'm here in the Kansas City area with you, and I practice privately now and do home visits and teleconsults all over the world, in home obviously just here in the greater Kansas City area. I was in the hospital for practicing as a LC there for 10 years in the NICU, labor, delivery, and mother baby. And I love it. I have a YouTube channel that I like to add to and have people be able to explore and just hang out with moms and babies all day, which, you know,
can't beat that.
Like in their special, even vulnerable, sweet, loving, and hard moments. It's great.
Absolutely. Yeah. Gosh, you have a lot of experience, and I love that you're accessible to everyone because it's like, you know, you're not just limited to the Kansas City area. The fact that, you know, the internet is so beautiful and it allows you to reach people far and wide on your YouTube channel, which is amazing. And I didn't realize that you did telehealth all over the world. That's incredible. So that's amazing. So everyone take note of that. When you listen to this, you're going to want to work with her. So get in line. I'm sure there's a wait list or something. So yes, I got a ton of questions. I have a ton of mamas in my community that are either expecting or, you know, about to be first time moms or second time moms like myself, and kind of anticipating that breastfeeding journey or hoping to breastfeed or pump. You know, we'll speak on pumping a little bit as well. But I wanted to just start off at the very, very beginning of, you know, let's talk about pregnancy, you know, for, especially for first time mamas, how can moms set themselves up for success during pregnancy to kind of prepare for that journey? And, you know, any specific things that you recommend having on hand before baby comes, that kind of stuff, you know, what can we do before baby is on the outside to get ready?
Sure. Great question. The best thing to do is get your network set up. So having that group of people that you can trust, having a lactation consultant on your side, having mothers who have successfully navigated breastfeeding or pumping, or had challenges and navigated through them, having that network, having a support group that's available to you, whether that's online, whether that's in person, because that's really where the learning can begin. And that can begin prenatally. It really should begin prenatally. Mm-hmm. That's when we are the most hungry for information, but also when we can digest it. Postpartum is a really difficult time to digest information.
Yeah.
So, you know, that can be taking a breastfeeding class, that can be binging any YouTube channel, just really reading up on it, reading a book. I think the other thing that's nice to be able to have set up is getting your pump from your insurance company, which is such a great thing that they offer now.
Yep.
And measuring your flange size, which is measuring your nipples, which is, this is a new really thing, even for us as LCs, we weren't doing that for years. And now in the last 3-4, we know that makes an incredible difference. And now they have smaller flanges. For decades, there weren't. So that can help you if you do have to be pumping early in the days that you're going to be using a proper size. You know, other things, of course, stores and media is going to make you think that you need all the things. A good baby carrier, you know, I think is helpful. And a place that's comfortable to sit or lay down. You'll be spending a lot of time there. And I know this isn't breastfeeding stuff, but to help the postpartum period, even doubling up on recipes and freezing a recipe a couple of times a week so that you don't have to think about cooking. Postpartum is so heavy in caretaking that the last thing you have time for is taking care of yourself, older children, your partner.
Totally.
People worry about nipples and cracks and kind of will load up on all sorts of creams that are out there. The reality is, if there is nipple damage, that if you're delivering at a hospital, if you're delivering at home, if you're delivering in the birth center, there is a prescription and an over-the-counter medicated ointment that is the best to use so that you don't have to like just buy a bunch of butters and creams and ointments, which women do because they're afraid. Like they don't, you know, nobody wants broken nipples.
Right.
It's horrible. So I would say that I'm a minimalist, and I like it when we don't have to spend a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, people might say, is nipple shield a thing to have on your list? Again, those things, if they were needed in the hospital, they will give them to you. If you're having a birth center birth or a home birth, you know, that can be something they have on hand or you can get. Yeah. So I don't really have much like, oh my gosh, this product is a have to.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that we can do on the cheap to navigate that time. I think the most important thing is education and support, really.
Totally. Yes. The support is absolutely huge. And like you said, you know, take advantage of the time that you have with lactation consultants in the hospital. I took every opportunity. I think some people, you know, everyone's different, obviously, in their comfort level with, you know, having their boobs out. But keep in mind, A, you'll probably never see that person again. be, they're there to help you, you know, they're right. there to make your life easier, hopefully. So just, I tried to soak in like everything I could in the hospital, but it's also the hospital is such a unique time compared to when you get home, you know, it's yes. like babies hardly even at the breast in the hospital because they're so sleepy that you're like feeding them from a syringe or a spoon or something. So uh-huh. it was like, okay, we were a week in and then we did an outpatient lactation consultant appointment because it was like, okay, this is totally different and new and we're having all these challenges. So yes, definitely, you know, continue to ask for help and yes. don't give up in those early weeks when it's really freaking hard.
Yeah, you're right. Like a lot of people, I think, are afraid to ask for help or think mm-hmm. it'll get better or I'll just wait until tomorrow and then the day gets behind. And ask sooner than later because yeah. problems are much easier to solve the faster we get to them. And there's no shame in asking for help at all.
Exactly.
At all. And really. All the LCs, all we see is breasts. So if someone's feeling funny yeah. about showing off their breasts,
yeah. Like, yeah.
it's not unusual for us. It's just, right. it's a funny thing to new moms because they're not used to meeting someone and lifting their shirt.
Right. Totally. It's crazy how quickly you get used to strangers and your friends seeing your boobs. You're like, I don't even care anymore. I'm whipping my boobs out. Sorry if you don't like it, but here they are. Okay. That's so true. Another thing that people had questions on during pregnancy, which I think is kind of interesting because you know, I feel like I've seen more about this on social media recently, is the colostrum. So questions about, you know, why do people collect colostrum during pregnancy? Also, I guess, explain what colostrum is for those who aren't familiar with it. What are some of the benefits of this and the risks of, you know, collecting that while we're pregnant, like in late pregnancy?
Yeah, great question. That is called antenatal expression. And so that is when you are expressing and collecting or harvesting colostrum before the baby comes. Colostrum is the first milk, just has a special name, that every pregnant woman makes and begins making it around 16 to 24 weeks. So you have some right mm-hmm. now.
I do. I've actually tested it. It's like I can get some out of my right side, but not my left.
So yes, that's great. It is recommended for higher risk pregnancies and or higher risk postpartum experiences. And not as a general recommendation, but if we have, say, for example, a mother that's insulin dependent diabetic, mm-hmm. she's likely that baby is going to be born struggling to maintain blood sugars. And so the need for supplementation of any sort of milk will be pretty likely.
Okay.
And it can be difficult also with those babies. They're usually super sleepy because of the insulin dependence. So they might not breastfeed well, and then they can't help to get their sugars up. Mm. So if a mom has hand expressed, which is usually the best way to express antenatally, colostrum is such a small amount and it can get lost if you're pumping beforehand. Mm. It kind of depends person to person, but
yeah,
it can help that mom even just have 1, 3, 5 ml on hand that she can then use to supplement the baby with her own milk with work she did before. Mm-hmm. Might be if a mother has experience with babies that have high bilirubin and experience a lot of jaundice. It's not routinely recommended just, oh my gosh, I'm first time mom, I should harvest colostrum. That's kind of operating on the assumption that there's going to be trouble, where more often than not, there isn't trouble. Mm-hmm. There's not really a risk unless it, few things. If a mother is essentially safe to have sex during her pregnancy, then she's safe to harvest colostrum and or be continuing to breastfeed through the pregnancy. Mm. So if we had bleeding during pregnancy, if we had, you know, if we were on bed rest, if we had risk of premature delivery, those would be reasons where like it would not be okay to harvest colostrum.
Okay.
But other than that, it's okay. Now, what time would you recommend doing it? It's not like somebody should be like 30 weeks pregnant and mm-hmm. harvesting, but could she harvest around 36, 37 weeks or later? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They have great little harvesting like containers and little tubes. Some questions I've gotten is, will I run out of colostrum if I harvest colostrum? Mm-hmm. No. It's not like it doesn't work that way. And you can freeze it. You store it just like any other human milk.
Okay.
Like I think I only touched on briefly, but colostrum is the first milk. It's loaded with immunities and special ingredients that are different than mature milk for our babies that are born with tiny tummies and need that, you know, essentially early vaccine to help them be safe in our buggy world.
Yeah. I know it's like when people talk about liquid gold, that's like breast milk in general, but like colostrum is like the top tier of the liquid
and
gold.
Usually very golden, very orange. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my favorite fact about human milk and colostrum is one drop has 1 million white blood cells. So, you know, it really does make a difference, and it's just nothing can beat it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I know. And I've literally learned so much from you throughout, you know, these past couple of years. But one of the coolest facts that I learned from you is how our breast milk is literally designed for our baby at the stage that they're in. So like, can you kind of talk about that? How I'm kind of skipping ahead here, but how our milk composition changes over time as their needs change? If you are currently expecting or have a little one, you have to check out Love Every. They have a wide variety of products for babies and toddlers that have been developed by experts to help support your child's brain development at each important stage. My son, Rhett, has always loved all of the toys in their play kits, and what's great is that the toys in previous kits are still a hit, so it's not like he only uses them for a few months and then they don't get used anymore. There's a great amount of variety in the boxes. One of the coolest things about parenting, in my opinion, is seeing your baby learn new things, so I've loved watching him learn while playing with their toys because some of them really challenge him to think outside the box. One of the Love Every must-haves that I recommend for all new mamas is the Play Gym. This was by far one of our most used items when Rhett was a little guy, especially with the addition of the sensory strands. They make all kinds of fun sounds like crinkles and squeaks, and he loved to swing at them and make all kinds of noise. They even have some home items like quilts, crib sheets, and prints to hang in your nursery, and we love their block set and play tunnel as well. Honestly, we've never gotten anything from Love Every that we didn't love, so I highly recommend checking them out and all that they have to offer. I will leave my affiliate link in the show notes if you want to look into any of their products. I hope your little one loves them just as much as Rhett does. Okay, let's get back to the show.
Yes, such a cool thing that our bodies do.
So cool.
Yeah, every woman's body will make different milk for each baby. So you're going to have different milk for this baby than you did for Rhett. Hmm. And yes, at every stage, it changes. So we begin with that colostrum milk. We move into what we call mature milk by, you know, 5 to 10 days. And then over the course of every day, every week, every month, the composition of that breast milk, whether that's the fats, the proteins, the sugars and carbs, the immune factors, all are like constantly, like someone's literally mixing it like on a stove, like, okay, now we need this stuff because dad brought home a cold and now I'm going to work on crawling. So give me a lot more of that protein. And, you know, it's just constantly evolving by touch from the mother, by exposure to other things, and is just such a fascinating thing that our body does. And some people can see it. Like there's visible, I'm sure people have seen pictures where you're like, wow, that milk is really golden. And that milk is really, you know, kind of watery and translucent.
Mm-hmm.
And some people never see it because they're not doing a lot of pumping or expressing at all, but it still happens.
Right.
The other thing is that mothers who give birth to a premature baby have a completely different set of milk than that same mother would have had if she would have given birth at term. Hmm. So that body knows this is a 25 weeker. This is a 30 weeker. And so pack it with something different than if the baby would have been healthy and full term.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
That's really neat too.
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah. I love that too. And it's nothing you have to like do. Like you don't have to think about it happening. It just happens.
Yeah. It's so cool. Our bodies are so incredible. Yeah. If you guys weren't convinced that your body is incredible just because of like growing a human in general, you know, once you think about the, you know, the breast milk and all the things that happen, it's just like mind blowing. Totally new appreciation for your body. Okay. So let's fast forward to, let's say, you know, baby has arrived and A couple people asked about pumping around birth. So, well, someone first of all asked if we should bring our pump to the hospital. And I would say, and you can correct me because I know you worked in that space, but most places will provide it if for some reason you need one, correct?
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. They will have a, if there's a need for it or you desire, they will wheel in a breast pump that's the medical grade, usually the Medela Symphony. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
You don't have to bring your pump, not as a concern, like, oh my gosh, if I need to pump, I should bring my pump. So people should be set at ease that there will be a pump there if they need it. Some people like to bring their pump so that the LC, the nurse, can show them how to assemble it, show them how to use it. And then, of course, there'll be a level of knowledge there that varies on whether or not they're familiar with the pump, you know, things like that. But yeah, it might make women feel better to bring it along and be like, it's a safety net, kind of.
Sure.
But not in the case of if they have to pump for any reason, there will be a pump available for them, even if they don't have one or didn't bring it.
Okay, good to know. And then someone asked if they're planning on exclusively pumping or if that's, you know, what they want to do, can they start right away in the hospital? Would you recommend trying to bring baby to breast for the first couple of days, or what would be, you know, I guess some pros and cons of that?
Yeah, if someone is in a decision where they feel good about their choice and want to begin exclusively pumping, I don't see any reason that they would need to put the baby to breast. That can actually trigger some, and I've worked with women like this, where it can trigger them into disliking the whole process and then not continuing with pumping. So, you know, and there's women that don't get to put their baby to breast because their baby is born extremely premature and they essentially start off exclusively pumping and their milk still comes in.
Yeah.
The trick at that point would become if she wants to start off exclusively pumping and does, you know, she's pumping every few hours around the clock through the night too, her collection amount will probably be pretty small, just because colostrum is a small amount and it can be hard to get it out with a pump and it gets stuck in all the traps of, you know, the ductbills and membranes and everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the baby might need another type of milk until her volume comes up, when that could be another mother she knows. It could be donor milk from the hospital. It could be formula milk. It could be, you know, whatever she decides. That would be the catch. But I definitely, I'm a supporter of what people want to do. And I've never told women, if you want to exclusively pump the first week, you better breastfeed. Like, no, not at all.
All right. I love that. What about what something you said there reminded me, and this, no one asked about this, but I feel like it's important to touch on because I think a lot of people aren't familiar or aware that this is a thing. And you can, I'm sure you know the term. What is it called when people have like the depressive thoughts or feelings when they're breastfeeding?
Yes, that is horrible. That is called, we call it DEMER.
DEMER, yes.
Yeah, DMER, dysmorphic milk ejection reflex.
Yes.
And that is such a horrible card to have gotten out of the deck. And women that suffer from DEMER can suffer in many ways. We can have women who, upon beginning to breastfeed, upon letdown, during the entire feed, with any time she's pumping, she feels aggressive, she feels angry, she feels anxious, she feels suddenly sad and depressed, angry at the baby, like feelings that she's never experienced before, come up only during those times. And it's a really tough one to, obviously a tough one to navigate.
Yeah.
For the mom herself, for the family, for the baby, and for us trying to help her, there's not a whole lot of solves.
Yeah.
For that. For some women, it's a phase and it gets better. And for other women, it continues the whole time. For other women, it creates the need to wean.
Yeah.
It's, DEMER is a horrible experience for anyone to get. Luckily, it's not super common.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But it happens. Yeah. Yeah. I remember learning about that. And yeah, I think it's important to say, you know, hey, if you're experiencing that, you're not alone. And yeah, if there is, you know, a reason to wean because of that. It's totally, you know, you can wean, of course, for any reason that you want to, but that would be a great reason to do so if it's impacting, you know, impacting your, like you said,
every
your whole
moment,
family, your whole life, right, you know, your ability to bond with your child, that kind of thing. So yeah, definitely a good thing to just be aware of. If you are feeling those feelings and you're like, what the hell is wrong with me? Yeah. That could possibly be what's going on. Okay. So before I kind of jump to building your house of milk, like you like to call it, this is like I told her before we started recording, I'm like, this is kind of selfish because I'm like, you know, mentally preparing myself for baby two. But I'm just like thinking back to the early days of milk coming in and being so painfully engorged that it was so hard to navigate because it's like you're trying to like put ice on your boobs and then heat on your boobs and like trying to figure out, okay, what do I need to do to like normalize things? I know some engorgement is probably inevitable, but like, what are your tips for engorgement? Do we want heat or do we want cold? How do we navigate engorgement?
Yes. Nobody likes uncomfortable breasts at all.
Yeah.
Yes. Some engorgement is normal.
Yeah.
And we would describe that as fullness, heaviness, some heat that you feel on the breast, still being able to palpate or manipulate the skin of the breast. Then there's pathological engorgement where it's like super tight skin, just the breasts have been filled up with cement and you can't move them.
Rock hard,
like just rocks. Mm-hmm. And that can happen for a multitude of reasons. With engorgement, there's many things that are happening. For most women, it will happen somewhere between day 3 and 5 or 6. Second timers, day 2 to 3.
Good to know.
And the best way, make sure latch is good because you want good milk removal.
Yeah.
Frequent nursing, which we'll catch on House of Milk. Mm-hmm. So if those two things are there, then it becomes managing comfort. And in the beginning, when milk is being established, it's more about inflammation than it's about milk being stuck in there and can't get out. Mm-hmm. So initial engorgement is best resolved with ice or cold, okay, you know. Mm-hmm. And I know they have products out there that you can chill. I'm a huge fan of just frozen veggies or frozen blueberries because you usually have them. You can just pack them on inside your bra and load up.
Yeah.
And you can also move it around your skin and put it around the whole breast. Whereas some of the products only cover like one small section of your breast.
Yeah.
And your whole breast needs that cold to respond to the anti-inflammatory property of the ice. So ice is usually the best ticket. Usually you can ice beforehand, before a feed or a pump, ice after a feed or a pump. Usually takes a couple of days to resolve, and engorgement is part of the normal process, but we just don't want it to get insane where you don't find relief or softening after a feed and the ice doesn't help you soften a little bit. Keeping the milk moving, lots of nursing, icing and using cold, even just 10 or 15 minutes around feedings can help significantly. Heat, for some people, they respond to it, but it most of the time it's inflammation and that's best used with ice.
Okay. So good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good tip on the frozen veggies. Just like using something that you already have and exactly, something that's big enough, like you said, to cover the surface area.
Right. Because you might need, you know, 5 bags apiece.
Yeah. Note to self, load up on frozen veggies that I probably don't even want to eat, maybe.
You might cook them while they're laying on your breast.
Yeah, exactly. Quick break to talk about the prenatals that I've been taking and loving for years, including throughout my current pregnancy. Fullwell supplements have been formulated by a registered dietitian who's passionate about women's health, and she wanted to create a supplement that was evidence-based, effective, and high quality. Ayla actually came on episode 8 of my podcast, and we discussed nutrition before, during, and after pregnancy, and we talk about the Fullwell supplements during that episode as well. Basically, they didn't cut any corners with these prenatals. Fullwell uses third-party independent testing for harmful contaminants such as heavy metals on every single batch they produce. These supplements also provide optimal doses and bioavailable forms of nutrients to support women before, during, and after pregnancy. I can honestly tell you that I have never felt nauseous from taking these, and I also love their fish oil supplements. They're a great size, easy to swallow, and no fishy burps. I feel great about all the research that Ayla has done to create such incredible products. If you're in the market for either of these things, you can use my affiliate code Wellness for the Win for 10% off your purchase. I will leave a link for you in the show notes if you want to check them out. Okay, so yes, moving on to the house of milk. So I love this kind of analogy that you, how you describe building our milk supply early on, because there's, of course, always there were lots of questions on milk supply. How do we avoid a low milk supply, especially if we had one with a previous baby, things like that. You know, people are asking how often should we be nursing or pumping in those early days. So I'd love to hear you speak on all of that.
Yes, I call it building the house of milk. And what the baby is designed to do is to trigger your body to move from colostrum to mature milk. And the only way that happens is by milk removal. And you'll see all over that the more, how do we make more milk removal. That's such a basic and simple process. Mm-hmm. Colostrum's hormonal. So that's a given. Everybody makes colostrum, but moving into mature milk has to happen by removal. Mm-hmm. So what we have to do first is trust the baby that they are interested in feeding anytime they give a feeding cue, which is can be tricky because families think, well, they're giving cues all the time.
Yeah.
And my response would be, yes, they are. They have a big job to do. They have to gain weight. They have to poop out the meconium. They got to get going, and they have to tell the mom how much milk to make. Yeah. So the baby is really the only one that's driving all of that. They're in charge of how much milk they will make for themselves and the mother will make. And the house of milk is the idea that there's a foundation building part of a milk supply, which is in the first 2 to 4 weeks of delivery. The earlier, the more important. But I get questions like, oh my gosh, I'm 4 weeks. Am I too late? You're not too late. Yeah. But first 2 weeks are critical. The second 2 weeks are also critical. Like the more we can focus on access to the breast or unrestricted access to the breast, the more helpful. So what I talk about is when you build a house, the first thing that has to happen is we have to build the foundation, and it has to be strong enough and large enough to support the structure that's going to come up afterwards. And the baby, every time they're breastfeeding, they are planting a little, essentially like a seed in the garden, so to speak, or a brick in the foundation of the house or the cinder block or whatever that is. And so we have receptors inside of our breasts. And every one of those little breastfeeds the baby does, let's say a baby breastfeeds 15 times in a 24-hour period, every one of those lays a little seed, like I said, but plants something so that it stays there for later when it's needed. And that window of time, that 2 to 4 weeks, is when our body is able to decide how much milk the mother will make forever. So it's not like we talked about, well, I guess we didn't talk about this, but we talked about how milk fluctuates and its ingredients to meet the baby's needs. Well, volume reaches its peak at about 1 month. And then we're on maintenance for volume for the first 6 months. We make the same amount. And from 6 to 12, we start dwindling down as baby eats more solids and gets more independent. So the house of milk time becomes critical to allow the mother to move from month 1 to 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 and beyond. And I talk about it like if someone was to say, hey, you know, we're building a 3-bedroom house, it has 2 bathrooms, you know, they start building, the construction crew is going at it, the foundation's down, the walls are up, and then someone comes in and says, hey, can you actually add a, you know, another master and maybe a master bathroom as well. And the crew would look at you like you're crazy. They're like, we've already like dug into the ground, built foundation. Like we can't go back.
Right.
And so you can't just add an extra room later on. You can't later be like, I need to make extra milk. Mm-hmm. I'm 2 months down the road. Let me see. Now there are obviously outliers where women can do this, but for the majority of it, it's determined in that first 2 to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So frequent feeding will allow all of those receptors, the hormonal receptors that are necessary for milk making, to mm-hmm. be laid down so that then her milk supply can just cruise after that. And we have a structure in the house of milk that's solid and the foundation is really good. And most families that go into this hear babies are going to feed every 2 to 3 hours. Babies are going to feed 8 times a day, 8 to 10 times a day, maybe 12 times a day, right? And our adult brain hears, oh, so 6, 9, 12, 3, 6, mm-hmm. or 6, 8, 10, 12. You know, we make it make sense in our adult minds.
Right.
And so then when the newborn wants to nurse every 45 minutes or has clusters of time where they never want to leave the breast, mm-hmm. the parent usually feels like something's wrong.
Yeah.
That she must not be making enough milk because why isn't the baby full? But when you explain, the baby is not supposed to be full right now. The baby's mm-hmm. job is to just like never leave the breast and trigger that house of milk and lay those hormonal receptors down and just feed a feeding frenzy. Then they can be like, oh, okay, I thought it was me. Mm-hmm. You know, I heard every 3 hours and my baby's nursed 8 times already in 4 hours. And so I thought there was something wrong with my baby or something wrong with me. So I usually prepare families for the fact that in those first few weeks, especially the first, 7 to 10 days, to expect the baby to be breastfeeding probably 20 hours out of the 24.
Yeah.
And they won't be nursing for 15 minutes and taking a 2 or 3 hour break. They're going to be mm-hmm. nursing for 45 minutes and taking a 20 minute break and then starting up again. And mm-hmm. breastfeeding timing is like contractions. So you start frequency from the beginning of a feeding to the beginning of the next. So that's a baby could feed every hour and a half mm-hmm. from 10, they start at 10 and then they might nurse till 10:45 and then start up again at 11:30. And that's nursing every hour and a half, but your 45 minutes of that is breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And so it can become confusing and mm-hmm. it sounds crazy. Like people hearing this are going to be like, no, like what am I getting myself into? And again, if you put your trust into the work in the beginning and really just allow unrestricted access, mm-hmm. then eventually the baby does get to the point where they nurse every 2 or 3 hours for 10 to 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And then you have 2 or 3 hours off.
Yep.
But that's after the house has been like mm-hmm. built and mm-hmm. solidified, so to speak.
Absolutely.
So the expectation that the baby will just feed 8 times a day is later mm-hmm, than what people think it is.
Yeah.
So that's one way to avoid common pitfalls with supply or, distrust in ourselves or doubting the whole process.
Right.
Is normal for newborns.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such an important point is just like you said, trust your baby, trust your body, feed on demand. That's the biggest thing is, don't question it, just feed them. And and a lot of times too, I know you kind of talk about the fact that not all nursing is necessarily like productive nursing. A lot of times they may just be like suckling or sleeping / nursing ish. So like you said, just give them access as often as you can, if possible. Mm-hmm. And that can just, set you up for success so much later on. And they do get so much more efficient too. Like I remember those early feeds taking forever in comparison. Yep. And then like eventually you get the hang of it and you're like, wow, we just nursed, 15 minutes and on one side and we're done. So it does become quicker and more efficient later.
It does. And it's also aligns with the anatomy of their stomach. So, mm-hmm. in the first week, their stomach is really small. And so they nurse for a long time because it gets filled up with the small amount of colostrum, which might be like a teaspoon of milk in the first couple days. Mm-hmm. And then small tummies empty quickly. So they're ready to go again. Mm-hmm. And so once their stomach is larger, it takes them longer to digest that volume of milk and they can go longer between feeds. But in the mm-hmm. beginning, it's like they're going to want to snack all day long because yeah. they're having like little chicklets, like, you know? Like,
yeah, totally.
Yeah. So that kind of helps for some people that are more, it can give them a picture. Oh, a small tummy is going to empty quickly. That makes mm-hmm. sense. That's yeah. why they want to eat 5 minutes after they ate.
Okay. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And, you know, talking about all this timing and schedules and things that we, you know, come up with in our minds, there's so many apps these days of like, you know, tracking diapers and tracking feedings. And yes. I was someone who I'm very type A, and I was like obsessively tracking like all the feeds, all the things, like literally writing like, okay, 16 minutes on my left boob and 31 minutes on my right boob and like the exact timing of all of them. And I think I still have a note.
You still
on my
have
phone.
It?
Yes. It would be like, I would have to scroll for like 5 minutes to get through the whole thing. But I was tracking it nonstop. And I remember in your Facebook group, I finally like posted and I was like, okay, he's like 4 months old. Do I still need to be doing this? And it's just one of those things that like you just get in such a routine with it that you're like, okay, whoa. It's kind of like I always compare it to like calorie counting for adults. Like
yes.
it becomes this obsessive thing that we don't even realize how like heavy it's weighing on us until we stop doing it. And we're like, holy moly, I have so much yeah. brain space for
brain
other
capacity.
Shit. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So can you kind of speak on your thoughts on tracking? Because I think especially as a first-time mom, you know, obviously we have these worries. We want to make sure they're getting enough. We want to make sure we're feeding them often enough, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, obviously pros and cons, I guess, of tracking in your thoughts.
Yeah, definitely personality driven. I do yeah. find that type A moms, which I include myself in, tend to lean into that and get trapped in there longer.
Yeah.
But it can be a disservice because you're not then relying on some of your instincts.
Sure.
Yes, apps can be helpful for sure. Mm-hmm. I think they're most helpful for tracking diapers.
Yeah.
Because that's what, for me as a lactation consultant, tells me the most about how the baby's doing, whether they're thriving, mm-hmm. whether they're gaining weight, if they're safe.
Yeah.
As far as tracking feeds, when I'm talking to a mother, it's usually very general because I can get an idea. I'm never like, she'll write down, like you said, 3:42 until 4:07, you know,
yeah.
this many minutes and doing all sorts of calculations. Yeah. What's helpful for me is questions like, is your baby waking on their own to feed? Yes. Mm-hmm. Are they too sleepy to wake up? Yes or no? Mm-hmm. Give me a general idea about how long they spend at the breast and are they active or are they super sleepy and you have to keep nudging them? Mm-hmm. Have you lost track of how many times they've been at the breast?
Yeah.
Great sign. Have you lost track of how many diapers they've had? Great sign. Mm-hmm. Is the baby rarely on the breast? Mm-hmm. So more than it's about like, has it been 7 times? Has it been 15? How many minutes were on each side? Those right. details are unimportant. Mm-hmm. to an LC and not really important to the mom either.
Yeah.
We want essentially a wakeful baby that is engaged during a feeding, active during a feeding, has moments of satiety. Now it gets tricky when they're nursing and cluster feeding, but, mm-hmm. and has adequate diaper output and then proven weight gain. And if we have those things, you can step back on the big picture and not get obsessed with the numbers because mm-hmm. the numbers can be, like you said, they can take up a lot of our brain space.
Yeah.
And it's unnecessary analytical thinking, and postpartum brains don't work well trying to analyze. Mm-hmm. We can get trapped in it, like yeah. we're talking about,
yeah.
but it's not a natural place for a postpartum brain to live. So if moms, you know, even if they want to do that, it can just be like the baby fed, check mark, and like, mm-hmm. you know, just the length of time isn't as important. It'd be like they fed at 3, they fed at 5, they fed at 6, they fed at 8.
Yeah.
And then tracking those diapers, I don't need the minutes. I don't need the sides. Moms might appreciate knowing what side, although even then, your body usually will tell you, it's a little alarm clock, which side maybe needs more attention than the other.
Yeah.
And you might not need to write that down. Or even with apps, you know, we didn't have those when I was doing my breastfeeding. So we would do, I would switch rings on my finger when it was time for a certain breast.
That's smart.
People put, my mom used to say she'd clip something on her bra. So we've always, for, you know, ever tried to figure out how to do that and remember what side's turn it is. But you get so tired sometimes that you don't even remember if you logged it in the app.
Yeah.
You know, true. And that, so when you get to that point, it's okay to just let it go. Or when you get to the point where baby's on track with gaining weight steadily and diapers are hard to keep track of, then you can, it's totally okay to be like, I'm out.
Yeah.
we don't need charts and all that stuff that, you know, unless it brings someone joy, then I'm good. They can do that. But if it's not bringing them joy and it's taking up space, then it's not necessary.
For sure. One last thing for now that I'm loving during this pregnancy is the Expecting and Empowered app for workouts. They have workout guides for every stage of pregnancy as well as postpartum, and I've really looked forward to doing them each week. And honestly, I've found it so much easier to be consistent with exercise this time around because of this app. So it's nice to have something to follow along with, first of all. The app is super easy to use, very user-friendly, and most of all, the workouts are programmed to last around 30 minutes or so, which personally feels very doable for me. During pregnancy specifically, they have three workouts per week to follow that include flexibility and pelvic floor moves. And then otherwise, they're very strength training focused, which I personally love. I've always enjoyed lifting, and I know that these workouts are preparing my body for labor and delivery, and most of all, recovery postpartum, but they're also allowing me to stay healthy and strong throughout this pregnancy. I am looking forward to utilizing their workouts when I'm postpartum as well. And if you're wanting to check out Expecting and Empowered, you can use my affiliate code Wellness for the Win to save on your subscription to their app. I'll leave a link for you in the show notes. Now back to the show. I think that's a good reminder. And yeah, I think it was helpful for me to make note of which sides. But like you said, I mean, you can usually tell by touch, like, oh, this one's definitely more full. I'm going to start there. But my, I know like a lot of people have like a dominant boob, like my right was definitely, what do people call it?
The slacker and I call them the keg and the pony keg.
Yeah.
But I think people call them, what do they call? So there's the slacker, but I don't know what they call the other one.
I know. That's what I was trying to think of too.
She's just the party girl, or I don't know. The
the hero, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's funny. But yes, my
money maker.
Left was definitely the lacking boob, but it still did plenty. So that's okay.
Yes.
And it's interesting too, because like in hindsight, we had trouble with latching on the left side in the beginning. And I'm sure that had something to do maybe with.
You think? Like at the very, very beginning, like in the
like the first couple
hospital?
Weeks.
First couple weeks.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wonder if it was that or if it was maybe just a positional thing where baby had been inside your body and squirreled up in all the ways they can get all up in there. And there was like a kink. And
yes, I think so.
You know, when you wake up with like a kink in your neck or something and like, then it's possible that Rhett, because of the discomfort from a certain position, would prefer the other breast. And then that created the, you know, discrepancy.
Yeah.
It's hard to know. It's hard to know.
I think I do think he had, I'm pretty sure he did have torticollis and that it was that side was affected. And so he was more comfortable on that side. We just both became to, you know, came to prefer the right side. So yeah, that just became my dominant boob.
That was your keg.
Yep. That's just how it worked out. Okay. I know we've touched a little bit on cluster feeding, but for people who are wondering about cluster feeding, like what, I guess, what exactly is it? Like you mentioned, basically feeding very, very frequently, like way often, basically never leaving the boob for a certain period of time, maybe a couple days or something. You know, what are some tips? Because I know some people like just feel like they're going insane when their baby's cluster feeding. And I know like you will probably agree that it's just remind yourself it's temporary. It's not forever. It's again, it's your baby signaling to your body what it needs and just to kind of trust the process. But someone did ask too, if cluster feeding leads to oversupply. So I was curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Interesting. Yes. So there's different types of cluster feeding and different times in a baby's breastfeeding journey that cluster feeding happens. Certainly within the first couple of weeks, it's like they're always cluster feeding. And they might have a period of the day where they go a longer stretch, and then the rest of the day is clustering. And when we say clustering, it's like it's bunching together a lot of feed. So it'd be like, if someone had six Christmas dinners to go to between, 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., and they're like, oh God.
It's a lot of food.
And it can be, it is taxing on us, and it's a lot of touch time. And you can feel touched out, and you can then go into the mind space where you think something's wrong. They must not be getting enough milk. Why are they seeming never satiated or satisfied? And then you talk to someone, about what's going on, and they can usually help you down off the cliff, because in the beginning they're doing it to build that foundation and that house of milk. So you see it a lot. Then you can have it during certain periods of the day. There's the common like happy hour, dinner hour time between, for some it might be 4 or 5 p.m. until like 9 p.m., where the baby is like harder to console, nursing all the time, can't put them down. People call it witching hour.
I
So it can
remember
happen
that.
like that. Yeah, it's tough hour. Client of mine, this is so funny. We were talking about it was the second, and we were talking about the witching hour and when it is. And he goes, "Well, it happens during happy hour, so I call it baby unhappy hour, and I just get a beer because it's happy hour." And
There
I
you go.
like true, like that's so true. Ladies, grab a glass of wine, grab a cocktail, grab a hot tea. I don't know. And sit
Whatever you need.
down, put on a show and just hang out. You're right that it does pass. So it's phasal. When you're in something hard like that, it feels like it will never end. But it does. It also happens during growth spurts. So we chatted earlier about how your milk is constantly evolving and changing to meet the baby's needs. And past 1 month, your milk supply volume is the same, but the ingredients change, the structure of the milk changes. So when a baby goes through a growth spurt, and they're 6 weeks is a common time, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, the baby will revert back to newborn feeding style, where they're doing just tons of clustering. And after a few days, after five, after six, the baby has then signaled to the body to change the structure of the milk, and then they go back to that typical feeding pattern that they're used to. So it's hard for everybody. We like routine and we like predictability, and babies are not, unfortunately. And they always throw you for a loop right when you've gotten into a routine. They now change it up.
So
So,
true.
cluster feeding, very normal part of breastfeeding, and happens at certain periods of the baby's life.
Okay. That's good to remember. Everyone, if you're in that season, just keep on trucking. It'll be okay. Like you said, put on a good show. That was my thing. I watched the entire series of Friends over again during my
Oh, what a
maternity
great,
leave.
yes.
Literally the best. And I'm like, it's just bliss. Like, having just cuddling with your newborn, watching a show, hanging out, like nothing better.
Yeah.
So soak it up. Just soak it up.
Yes. Yes.
Because they don't, babies don't keep, they're
They
freaking, all of a
don't
sudden they're
keep.
toddlers and you're like, what happened to my tiny baby?
Yeah.
But it's still
Yeah.
so fun.
Yes. Yes.
So of course we kind of already touched on milk supply and building the milk. So I wanted to skip to thoughts on pumping with a newborn. So, we kind of talked about in the hospital, but let's say, okay, we're a few weeks or, the first couple months in. When should we maybe consider starting to pump if we're someone who's going to go back to work, or if we just simply want dad to sometimes give a bottle, or a family member, we want to occasionally be able to leave the house, that kind of thing. When is the best time to begin doing some pumping and or introduce a bottle?
Yep, that's awesome. Yes, most women, I would say, in this day and age, need to do some form of pumping because they are going to be separating either for occasions or for returning back to work. So, kind of referring back to the house of milk, The best time to initiate pumping would be within that first couple of weeks. If you don't start then, it's not the end of the world. So everyone listening, just remember, not everything's black and white. There's a whole lot of gray.
Yeah.
But because your body is, anytime the milk is removed, it tells your body to make that milk during the house of milk time. Mm-hmm. If you're doing an extra pump, or haka, or hand expression, or whatever, mm-hmm. your body will make a little bit of that extra. And it will always make that little bit of extra as long as you keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't start until 6 weeks and you go back to work at 10 or 12, it's going to be really hard for your body to trigger making that milk when it wasn't put into the foundation. Mm-hmm. Then it's like going back to the construction worker and being like, I want an extra wing. And they're like, oh, sorry.
Too late.
yeah. So really the best time for a mom who's returning back to work full time would be the second you feel that engorgement, go ahead and start pumping once a day. It's really okay. all you need to do. Mm-hmm. And it will feel amazing, especially if you've iced beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to have the self-control to not pump again because it feels so good. Because mm-hmm. then what you're doing is telling your body that you need an extra more. Feed every yeah. single time.
Yeah.
And that leads me back to what I didn't answer about cluster feeding. Cluster feeding does not create oversupply. Cluster feeding is a baby doing what they need to do and we're responding to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Removing extra milk the baby doesn't need, if not done with good guidance, can lead to oversupply for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Most women with once a day of pumping, in addition to all the breastfeeding the baby does, can stock away plenty of milk that will give them like the good feels they need to not be worried.
Mm-hmm.
If a woman's working part-time, she could probably get away with pumping one side rather than both once mm-hmm. a day. If the mother's not returning to work in a formal fashion and will be staying at home and or working from home and nursing while the baby's there, she probably doesn't need to pump regularly, but I usually have them pump like once a day for the first week or two, collect enough to have for like the first bottle and just a little extra, and then no longer pump. Slowly stop that session because mm-hmm. there's no need to have a ton in those cases.
Yeah.
When you use the bottle, you need to pump because the baby's not breastfeeding, and then you'll replenish what you used.
Mm-hmm.
So for those people, they can usually stop after a certain point when they feel like they have enough or keep going because they don't care.
Yeah.
Bottle introduction, again, not black and white, whole lots of gray.
Mm-hmm.
Typically speaking, we would say introduce anywhere between like 4 to 6 weeks, like or after is fine too. Some people, they're very nervous about it because mm-hmm. they've heard about bottle refusal with friends of theirs. Bottle refusal is more rare than is placed on the media
mm-hmm.
because when things aren't going well, we talk about it.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
We don't talk about it when it's uneventful.
Right. Exactly.
So most babies do just fine with a bottle, even babies yeah. that have to start in the hospital, even babies, you know, as long as we pace feed the bottle where we're allowing the baby to work for the milk instead mm-hmm. of holding the bottle upside down and the baby's lying back.
Yeah.
That helps them transition between breast and bottle because they're doing effort on mm-hmm. both parts to get the milk out. So is it going to ruin somebody if they start a bottle at 1 week? No. Is it going to ruin somebody if they didn't start offering the bottle until 8 weeks? No. It's much more about baby's personality than anything is what I've found mm-hmm. over the years. You know, my babies that are bottle refusers refuse the bottle even from the beginning or even late. And my babies who accepted it, like it's
yeah.
Some babies are a little more persistent and particular than mm-hmm. others. So, you know, it's not a huge, I don't like moms to go into things expecting problems or stress, but I know that's part of it.
Yeah.
But pace feeding then becomes really important to help protect breastfeeding, yeah. whether they introduce the bottle earlier or later, either way. And there's yeah. no magic. So you hear people like, oh, here's the best way. Here's mm-hmm. the only way. Like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. That's a very, that's a really good reminder too, because again, a lot of us are introducing a bottle so someone else can feed baby when we're gone. And so making sure that your partner or your in-laws or your parents or whoever's going to be feeding baby or daycare provider, that they're pace feeding, that's so important and something that we had to educate all of our people on. Because I did all my, you know, research and everything before baby came. And so, you know, making sure that everyone was on the same page. And I was like, yeah, don't just like dump it down their throat so that he doesn't want to breastfeed anymore. Cause he's like, oh, that's way easier. That's a good thing for everyone to know. And I would say, do you have a YouTube video about pace feeding and showing, like demonstrating how to do that? Or people could look at it.
I don't, but there's lots of videos out there. I have an Instagram link on it, and there's a popular YouTube video that I usually send to my moms. It's widely known about now, but in our parents' generation and grandparents' generation, like,
it was not.
You just correct.
Yeah. Things have changed a little bit.
Yes,
which that generation doesn't always like to accept, but
yes, that's true.
Guess what? Things don't look the same as they did 30 years ago. So
yes, okay. So true.
That's a good one to cover for sure. So I know, and this is going to be one of those things that it's so individual too, but like, as far as pumps go, are there any specific ones that you prefer or any that you don't like or recommend? Obviously, these days there's like the hands-free ones, which I used the LV last time. And
no, you loved it.
I personally had a great experience with it. And I know a lot of people are like, it doesn't suction well enough. Like they blame like their low supply on it. And that could absolutely be the case for certain people. But like you said, having the correct measurements and stuff is likely very important there too. So just so many factors in terms of like people's experiences with different pumps. So I guess any thoughts that you have on all the pumps?
I know. Yeah. Well, what happened was insurance started providing breast pumps and then everybody got on the bandwagon to make pumps. And so, you know, still today I'm seeing all these new pump brands out there and I'm like, oh, good night. That's a full-time job, me keeping up with all the pumps that are out there.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
I'm not married to any special brand of pump, bottle, passy, nothing. People are too different and people respond differently to everything.
Right.
The wearable pumps are a newer kind of pump. So, and from what I've experienced with my moms, it is a bigger learning curve.
Yeah.
And there's usually some tweaking that has to go on to like get the suction right, center your nipple without being able to sort of see your nipple go in, and what size breast you have and how tight the bra might be. And then there's the classic wall pumps. You know, you have Spectra, Medela, Amita, Luna Motif, which kind of functions like the Spectra does. Those are all great pumps. Again, like you said, more about flange fitting and making sure that, and we can usually get a mom to respond to any pump. Flange fitting important with the hands-free ones and wearable ones also, where you're using inserts or, you know, whatever lowest flange they have. Some of them have 20 ones. Even some of the cheaper ones, like there's a one now called, there's Baby Buddha, which I've had a lot of moms love. It's the wearable one. And there's Mom Cozy and the wearable ones. They've liked that. I've had recently some LV Stride lovers.
Yeah. That's what I was going to get this time. I've heard great things about it. So I was going to give it a shot. Yeah.
Yep. I haven't heard as many great things about the Willow. I think that it's not to disparage Willow at all, but it's harder to get milk out. And there's lots of more. You have to hold the pump and then twist it and then it click clicks and then turn it a different way, click click, before you can pour the milk out because it gets the air out and all these different things. But then there's people that love the Willow, so
yeah
you know, I think you know, making sure that you do have insurance that covers it and knowing that you don't have to like go all out with spending crazy amounts of money on those pumps. But yeah, it's tricky. There's crummy pumps out there too that are just like a poor brand and do nipple damage and, you know, haven't been out very long. The oldest brands, and by oldest, I guess maybe the better word is more mature, been around longer. Medela and Amita are the kind of grandmothers that have just, you know, like been around forever and have
a lot
of
test
proven,
of time.
And then I would say Spectra's next. And that one has done so great over the last, you know, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the more, I guess, household name brands. Sure.
Yeah.
But there's a lot out there. So, and everybody's so different. Flange fit becomes the most important thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing to know. And also, another thing that a lot of people talk about is the Hakka.
Oh, yes.
So can you talk about pros and cons of the Hakka? Because I think there's, you know, again, everyone raves about it. I know when I was pregnant last time, everyone was like, this is the number one thing that you need, blah, 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 which is funny now because I'm like, I personally barely used it. But I know some people use it multiple times a day. Like they just swear by it. So thoughts on the Hakka, and I guess explain what it is to people who aren't familiar with it.
So the Hakka, they call it the Hakka pump, but it's not technically a breast pump because it doesn't have repeated suction. So like when we're hand expressing, when the baby is breastfeeding, when we're using a manual pump or an electrical pump, there is 50 pulls every 60 seconds that are like a tick tock of a clock that help pull the milk out. So a Hakka is not a good replacement for pumping when you're away from your baby or when you're not breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more of a milk collector or milk catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And it can have several different uses. So you can use it passively, which is when you just hold the Hakka up to the breast and whatever leaks into it, you collect. And that's kind of like bonus milk that you can like over time collect or give a shot to someone that's sick in the household. little shot of milk. But and there's little tricky tricks that you can like help it stay securely on the breast without suctioning it. So you're literally not holding it, but it's still a passive collection. Mm-hmm. And then there's the active collection where you're turning the Hakka, the silicone Hakka, a little inside out and it suctions onto your breast. And then there is suction that actively pulls milk out.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some women, they respond really well to that and they can collect 2, 3, 4, 5 ounces while the baby's feeding on the other breast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's deceiving because you're thinking, wow, this is awesome. Like I just got 5 ounces and I didn't even do anything. Like this is so great. Which if you use it judiciously, where if someone, you know, when we talked about when to begin pumping, if someone didn't want to pump every morning and just wanted to put the Hakka on from the get-go once a feed or once a day and just store that collection and just do it then, they're probably even just fine. But if a mom is breastfeeding and is putting the Hakka on the other side every feed, she's going to create most likely a massive oversupply, which can lead to constant engorgement, discomfort that doesn't get resolved, a baby who is essentially doing a keg stand and frustrated every time it goes to the breast.
Yeah.
And it can create a lot of frustration and discomfort. So yeah, you don't have to have one in order to breastfeed. And you just want to make sure that the milk you're removing is, you know, you're mindfully doing it rather than just always doing it. And the other thing I forgot to mention would, you don't want to like 3 months down the road decide to put the Hakka on while the baby is feeding. And then you pulled off the milk the baby was going to get. And then they go to the breast and they're like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
And then the baby is frustrated.
Yeah. So it's like, what the hell, mom?
Right. Like, wait, I was going to do that work.
Yeah. That's a good thing for people to know, because like you said, it's like this sense of accomplishment to see milk come out. We're like, oh, hell yeah, I got 3 ounces, whatever.
Yes.
But yes, we don't want that oversupply. So just being very conscious of the risk of that if you are using it a lot. And of course, too, being aware of if you're using it passively or actively doing the suction. Because that's a big difference.
Passively, you can't do it. There's no risk to that. So leaking into whatever, great.
Right.
It's just
and like those milk collector things stick in your bra, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
The ladybug that Hakka makes or the milk savers or all those are awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
LV catch, I think.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I definitely need to be smarter about using those this time, because it's like, otherwise you're just like leaking into your breast pads or whatever, and just like milk is going to waste. So you might as well catch it if
Save
you can.
It. Yep. Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, that's where I'm going to leave you hanging today, and I will share part two next week, which is packed with so much more information. I will share what you can expect in the intro of that episode, so stay tuned. I hope you enjoyed this one and found it helpful. If you did, I would absolutely love it if you sent the link to a friend, an expecting or new mama who might benefit from hearing it, or if you shared it on social media and tagged me at Wellness for the Win and Wellness for the Win Pod, and of course, Summer as well at Done Naturally on Instagram. We look forward to chatting with you next week. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and took away some tips or wisdom that you can apply to boost your health and happiness starting today. If you did, I would love it if you would subscribe to the podcast and leave a rating and review to help other women like you find my show and get inspired to start living a life they love. Also, take a quick screenshot and share it to your Instagram stories. Be sure to tag me at Wellness for the Win so I can see why you love today's show. Thank you so much for listening, and talk to you next time.